This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick on Twitter at OldFLA and visit his website, rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Florida Spectacular. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
I'm great. I'm ready to go. I'm excited about today's topic. I actually did a little research, and I have lots of questions.
Okay, great. Well, we'll give our listeners some background. A few weeks ago, I was out in the Orlando area, and I stopped by to see Rick and his lovely wife. And our guest today, Joe Colucci, works for a company that makes a papaya liqueur, and he had sent us a bottle. And before we get to Joe, tell us what your wife made, because it was really tasty.
She made a rum runner, actually, with the liquor in it. I'm not sure if that's on the recipe page. I was looking at the recipe page, and I got sucked into the old-fashioned recipe. But she, I don't know where she found it. She's not a mixologist, but she dabbles.
She mixed really well, very honestly.
Yeah, it was good. It was yummy. And it's a very interesting taste. And I think whatever she did complemented the liqueur very well.
It
I have a big question,
yummy.
Though, that I'm dying to know.
You're
what's
dying?
The difference? I'm
Don't
dying
die.
To know. What's the difference between a papaya and pawpaw? Are they the same thing? Because I could not find out on the internet. I got more confused when I did research.
Yeah, you know what? It is confusing. So, pawpaw is what Floridians used to call, old-time Floridians would call papaya. So it's a term, and we actually verified it. And then interestingly enough, as we've kind of been telling our story, my friend who's from Jamaica, Bootleg Greg, best name in the liquor business, he said, yeah, we always called papaya pawpaw. And similarly, folks from Australia. So I think there's something to have to do with the, you know, maybe European English influence in the colonies and whatnot. But the reason why it's confusing is because there is a pawpaw fruit, which is up north. Some of the nicknames, Indiana banana. It's got a different consistency. It's got larger seeds. It's altogether a different fruit, though I think they are related, you know, millions of years ago. But it is confusing, but we did in fact know, and we can get into the story. We did confirm that this version, Munyon's Pawpaw, which is a homage to a brand that was around 120 years ago, that in fact was papaya.
Okay. I couldn't understand because, you know, it gets into the Latin names and there's different varieties. And I did see the Indiana banana and all that stuff. And it's like, is that papaya too? Because then when you look at the, you know, like the Wikipedia page, it has papaya and pawpaw interchangeably, but then it's like, well, it has a different Latin name, and I got very confused. So this is papaya, which is in
Correct.
Onions. Okay.
How,
cool.
How many hours of research did you do on papayas for this episode, Rick? It sounds like you went down
This is a great story that I had never heard about, and you know, it's right up my alley because we're talking about, you know, resorts that were geared around health, and you're talking about a larger than life figure who came to Florida, you know, promoting health, who was involved with all these natural cures. That's right up my alley. And there were, I found an article that proclaimed the drink to be the fountain of youth. So it's on several levels. This is right up my alley.
Wow.
So I was very excited to, I was just going to do a little bit of research and I'm like, what, how come I've never heard of this? So we should let him tell the story.
Yes. Joe, tell us your story.
Yeah. So, well, thank you guys, first of all, for having me on and letting me tell the story. And I appreciate that rum runner sounds fantastic, Rick. I'm going to have to recreate that one on my own. So, so I'll kind of take you back and feel free to just ask any questions because I talking about a lot of research, we've done it as well. So, so I've been in the liquor business for 22 years now, been in Florida for 25, called home. My wife is a Floridian and my kids are now as well. And I just love the state. And so been in the liquor business, and me and a good buddy of mine who started back in the day working with Cruzan Rum, which the offices were based here, even though it's from St. Croix. We worked with those guys, and then that got sold. We were kind of low men on the totem pole. We just were left kind of looking for jobs, and got with another company called Imperial Brands, which did Sobieski vodka. And that was imported. The guy who started Belvedere sold Belvedere and then started that. And then he wound up, so we started building that. That wound up going to another distributor, and we were kind of looking at the same situation. So we went separate ways in the industry, but we remained close friends. I'm in Jupiter. He's in Palm Beach Gardens, adjacent to it. And this story kind of takes place. It's a real Palm Beach story. So anyway, that's the basis of we've been in the liquor business, and we always kind of had our eye out for something that we could do together and start the brand. So there's a little island in the Intercoastal Waterway in northern Palm Beach County. The island is called Munyon Island, and it is very unassuming. You would go by it on a boat, and you wouldn't even think twice about it. It's just mangrove covered, and it's actually part of a state park called John D. MacArthur Beach State Park. It's the only state park in Palm Beach County, and that state park is located on Singer Island, which is the barrier island that forms the intercoastal down here. Interestingly enough, it's the Singer Sewing Machine family fame of that originally had that property. So it's just a local park, and I was there with the family. You can kayak out to Munyon Island. It's only accessible by boat. They have a dock on one side for boaters to pull up, and you can kayak out there and just have a great day. Actually, it's a lot of fun. So we were there, and we go back. You know, a lot of locals down in this area, after talking with people for the last 2 years about this all the time, I'd say probably 15-20% of locals in northern Palm Beach County know Munyon Island, but not a lot of people know the history. And so the visitor center at the state park has a display, and we were back there about to finish our day at the island and at the park. And this visitor center has a display, and it's got a silhouette of this character of a man named Dr. James Munyon and his funny hat from back in the day. And it's got these old bottles and this old medicine type bottle in a glass case. And it looks like this old apothecary bottle, a brown amber glass, you know, and it just has that reminiscent feel from days gone by. And it turns out that the reason why it's called Munyon Island is because that guy, Dr. James Munyon, at the turn of the last century, he owned one of the largest homeopathic remedy companies in the country. It was called Munyon's Homeopathic Remedy Company. And the crown jewel of his empire was Munyon's Pawpaw Cure-All Elixir. And so this was, he was selling millions of bottles. He was as famous as the president, and he was a pop culture icon. And so there's really just this little blurb and this bottle. So I called my good buddy, Paul, who aforementioned buddy in the industry. And I said, man, did you know there was a liquor from down this way? And he said, I know Munyon Island, but I had no idea it was associated with the liquor. So he came down within the next 2 weeks. We were both at that display looking at it. And then that just unleashed us to go down a rabbit hole. So we did that, and we just started researching. But, you know, I always say it's a very Florida story. So I went to Florida Atlantic University in Jupiter, and at their Jupiter campus. And I was in, of all places, a Publix, very Florida company. And I bumped into my old history professor from FAU. And I said, Dr. Strain. He's like, Joe, you can call me Chris now. But I said, all right, Chris. I said, me and my buddy are trying to learn about a local historical figure, and we're hitting a lot of dead ends online. What do you recommend? And he said, I would go to the Historical Society of Palm Beach County and do your research there. So, we went. That's exactly what we did. Went, hit the archives, dug in. They were like, of course we know Munyon. He was such a character, and he was such a prolific Palm Beacher back in the day. What do you want to know about him? Why are you learning about this? And we said, we're in the liquor industry. We want to bring Munyon's pawpaw back. So they, you know, it's funny. In this career, anytime you start saying stuff like that, you get friends pretty quick. Oh, all right. You know, our sample's going to be coming this way. So they were as sweet as can be and helped us out. And they said, you've got to learn about this guy, Ned Heindel. We should try and connect you with him. And I know I'm throwing a lot out there. Any questions? Does this work? You guys want me to keep chatting and tell
me? No, I'm sucked in. I want to hear more.
Yeah, keep talking. You're doing great.
All
right.
I have questions after.
Yeah. Jump in at any time. But so I could talk about this for hours. So Ned Heindel, it turns out, we said, who's Ned? They're like, he's writing a book on Munyon. He pops in here every once in a while, but he lives up north, and he is a really nice guy. And we have his transcripts from what he started so far. We can only photocopy a couple pages and give it to you by law and with our agreement with them, but you should connect with them. So we Paul calls him. I mean, I don't know how many times before Ned answers finally, right? This is several months. It turns out he's a professor of chemistry at Lehigh University in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And so Paul connects with him and he's talking to him all about it. And he said, "What do you guys want to know?" And Paul's like, "We want to know what we anything we can because we're trying to make this story come back to life." And he goes, "Well, I've been studying James Munyon for 50 years. I know everything that there is to know about the guy. I'm an open book. I would love to hear you guys or help you guys out and bring Munyon's back to life." So he said he was just as nice as can be. So after chatting with him for a while, Paul says, "I think, you know, my buddy Joe and I should fly up and see you." And he welcomed that. And interestingly enough, it's about 45 minutes away from where I grew up. One of my best friends went to Lehigh at Bethlehem. So I knew the area. And we meet Ned. He was probably in his early 80s at that time. He says, "Let's meet at the pub." And we just meet him. We belly up to the bar and have some cocktails, and we just learn all we could about him. And so interestingly enough, Ned had always been a chemist, but when he graduated college, he got into the pharmaceutical business. I think he was working for Merck Pharmaceuticals, and he just always had an interest in history and these medicine men slash snake oil salesmen of back in the day, pre-pharmaceutical era and everything along those lines. And a mentor of his said, "You should learn about James Munyon." And he's like, "Who's that?" And he goes, "He was a character. I don't know a lot about him, but I don't have time to get into it, but you should do it." And that unlocked a lifelong hobby and passion of Ned's for learning about James Munyon. He traveled literally all around the world, meeting family, going down leads about the stories. He came down here a number of times. One thing I thought was really fascinating was that he had actually talked to a first-person source because when he started researching him, he spoke with an old, much older gentleman who said, "Yeah, I was a bellhop at the Breakers Hotel, and Munyon came in, and I met him several times." And mind you, Munyon passed away in 1918, so this is going back some time. So really great story. So Ned tells us all this stuff. He says, "I'm writing a book. Been writing it for a while. Honestly speaking, we were not convinced that he was going to come out with a book if he had been writing it for 50 years." But we told Ned that we had been buying all these old bottles on eBay, original bottles, only expecting them to come empty. And two of the bottles showed up with the liquid still in it for back in the day, sealed and everything. And it was great. And Ned's eyes lit up and he said, "This hasn't been tested since Munyon was alive, and obviously our technology is much better." He goes, "You got to get me a sample of that." So we pulled the sample with a needle through the cork, sent it to Ned. He runs it through the lab at Lehigh, and he says, "Yeah." And this is again back to that comment, Rick. So that's how we knew. He confirmed that it was papaya. We had corollary evidence because of these old postcards and writings about what was on Munyon Island because he was growing all this stuff and everything along those lines. So we learn that it was papaya. There was this stuff called Nux Vomica, which was a homeopathic remedy that may or may not have done anything. Alcohol, which give or take 20%. And he said, "I'll tell you, the secret ingredient was THC back in the day." So we said that is fascinating. And we just start so that was it. And we said this story is so cool. We really want to bring it back. Uncle Sam's a little bit more strict these days, so we didn't bring it back with any THC in it. We stuck to kind of what we know in the alcohol industry and just made it an aperitif. But that just Ned gave us all these resources and we learned about Munyon, who was incredibly fascinating. So to kind of take you back to the island, he was selling millions of bottles of Munyon's Pawpaw, doing incredibly well. Came down on Flagler's Railroad in the late 1800s, made it to Palm Beach County, saw that island, which was owned by a local family called the Pitts family, just a pioneer family down here that had homesteaded the island. He purchased it off of them and he built the Hotel Hygeia, which was named for the Greek goddess of health. And he was a contemporary of Flagler. He lived on Palm Beach Island and owned a swath of land there from the Intercoastal. Then Lake Worth, which it wasn't the intercoastal as it is today, all the way to the ocean. And he would take people on a little boat, a ferry boat from the Breakers over to the Hotel Hygeia, where he had gardens. He had thousands of varieties of roses grown. He had papaya, he had orange, he had hibiscus, all these different things. He had fountains on the island too. And that might be where the sort of fountain of youth analogy came from, because he would tout his water as being great. And then there, it probably was just piped in, to be honest with you, but he did have some, he was a real interesting character. So he basically had this thing going until 1917. The hotel burned down. Munyon passed away in 1918 at Flagler's Royal Poinciana Hotel. He actually had requested, his businesses were based in Philadelphia prior to him coming down here full time. So he had one square block in Philadelphia. So he had requested that his body get returned to Philadelphia. So he's buried up there just outside the city. And I mean, we could go and unpack several different things, how interesting Munyon was, all the different things he did, kind of how we brought Munyon's back and all those things. But I guess I'll just ask you guys, I mean, what seems most interesting? Where do you want to go? Any questions? Because I can ramble sometimes.
I have questions. So I read something about one of the big ingredients was sulfur water. And did you, because I knew it was a well that he drilled there, but did you find anything out about that, about the water having a high content of sulfur?
No, but that makes sense, being that like that it could have happened. The only thing that we found from the analysis that Ned told us about was the papaya. He confirmed the papaya, the Nux vomica, added sugars, the alcohol content, and the THC. So he didn't talk about the sulfur content of the water. But interestingly enough, the reason – so Munyon had this obsession with water, and he got into the homeopathic remedy business because he was a – rags to riches story. He was born in Thompson, Connecticut in 1847, dirt floors in his house, poor, larger family, started actually selling tinctures and tonics door to door when he was in 10, 11 years old, just to kind of help put food on the table. And so he was always really gregarious, but he always had this penchant for kind of, oh, these elixirs that started when he was a kid. However, he didn't really wind up in that business until later on in life. He had become, amongst other businesses, hotelier, a publisher. He got in the theater business as an agent, but he wound up publishing a number of almanacs and really realized early on the buying power of women. And so he did some like kind of articles that targeted women and kind of started selling some things and advertising. But one of the things he really noticed was that the advertising dollars that he saw that he was most impressive with were these homeopathic remedy companies. And he said, man, there must be something in there. So he started investing in them. And then he started saying, I know the power of advertising because I've been selling it. And I know the power of these guys because they've got a great product and it's working. So that's how he got into it. And then he started getting into this wellness. And he had two hotels, not only the Hotel Hygieia, but he had a hotel in Rangeley, Maine, Mingo Springs. And before... so he had a hotel up there that doesn't exist either, but there are still, there's a Munyon Road, I believe, up in Maine. And he was touting how great the water in Maine was 120 years ago. And then now you got brands like Poland Spring and everything along those lines. And everybody in Maine will tell you that the best water in the country is from Maine. And he was saying this forever. And so he was kind of obsessed with the water. And then there was no, you know, he didn't have the spring access. So I think he just tried to pipe it in, but he was obsessed with water. And I'm sure there was some sort of water. And if down in South Florida, we've got a well, if we don't treat it, it's sulfur. so I'm sure that's kind of where that came from.
Fascinating. I love it. Kathy, you got any questions? Cause I could keep going.
Well, I just wanted to add, you talk about sulfur, and in my early career, I worked public relations for a local utility company. And I will tell you, there are no known health benefits to sulfur water, but it's hydrogen sulfide and it's occurring in all groundwater in Florida. And the way most utilities remove it, if they're using groundwater as a source, is they have these big enclosed spaces that when the first thing they do, when they pump it up from the aquifer, it's they aerate it. That's all you have to do. They shoot it up into big fountains because as soon as you get oxygen mixed with it, it dissipates. And there is actually, I just can't resist my Florida facts. There is actually no taste to it. If you hold your nose, you cannot tell that it is there. So I just
Maybe
felt
it's
like
a
I had to
smell.
drop that knowledge
Maybe.
in there. The smell is very distinct.
Yes. I remember going to summer camp at Camp Crystal Lake near Gainesville or Keystone Heights, I think. And just the water was smelled so bad. And I think maybe it is. But also, you could smell it at a number of springs. Green Cove Springs is probably the strongest that I can think of. But you're right, it is hydrogen sulfate. And I can never remember that. So I thank you for adding that. You know who this guy reminds me of? Have you run across John Harvey Kellogg?
I don't know a ton about him, but I believe, if
He
I'm
was a
not
weirdo.
mistaken, he started a town down this. I think he had pretty big influence in South Florida, if I'm
Miami
not.
Springs. Miami Springs. He had a sanitarium there. It's the Battle
Okay.
Creek, Miami Springs Battle Creek Sanitarium. Very similar, larger than life character, perhaps more whack-a-mole. I think one of the big differences, what I learned about Munyon, is he seemed like he was a ladies' man, perhaps. He
He,
had three wives, right?
yeah, and the last one was I always say is a quintessential Palm Beacher. He was about 40 years older than his last wife. She was a famous actress back in the day. So yeah, he was like that. And interestingly enough, so to kind of take it through a few other factoids about Munyon. So I mentioned born dirt poor. He actually moved to Indiana during the Civil War, and the closest big city was Chicago. So he went to Chicago. He became part of the theater business, but he was, and that's where he became a theatrical agent. And even more interestingly enough, before that, during that time, almost contemporarily with it, he realized that these cleaners, not dry cleaners, the predecessor to dry cleaners, were using starch, and he encapsulated starch, and that was his first business. And so it was in the starch business for the dry, it was like the predecessor to dry cleaners, did great with that, got into the theater business as a theatrical agent because he was actually a great singer. But to tie it into what you were talking about, he does well, he has a business partner. And he says, "I've got a good voice. I know the theater business. I've always wanted to become a singer. I'm moving to Europe and I'm going to learn how to sing and travel around Europe and kind of take a stab at becoming a famous singer." But he had a young man, great voice, pocket full of money. And I think he just enjoyed himself, partied a good amount. And he came back to the US with not much, not being a famous singer. And his business partner had sort of run the business into the ground, so he was kind of starting from scratch again. But I think between the ladies and the fame and being that gregarious personality, it did him well sometimes, and sometimes I think it did him in. But another interesting fact about that is I mentioned the age gap, 40 years younger, I believe she was when we were bringing Munyon's back. So we think that. This thing is really a cool story. It ties into our local history. Having been in the liquor industry, we know a few things that it's a dynamic industry, and you can do it for 100 years and not know it all for sure. But a couple of things that we always thought were a brand's got to have a really good story, and it's got to be authentic. And so we thought that this was the making for that. But one of the first things we asked was, "Hey, can we get this? Does the family own this trademark? How does that happen?" And when we approached an attorney about it, they said, "No, listen, in Florida, once somebody's passed away, 40 years is the rule, right? After 40 years, if nobody's used the trademark, you can go ahead and just trademark it. There's two exceptions. One is if it's the president of the United States, they have the estate in perpetuity. And two, is if the widow is still alive." We knew Munyon had died in 1918, but we real quick, I mean, it's a quick math, but it was, "Hey, wait a second, she was a lot younger than him. No, she'll be deceased too." But it was such a gap that we said we got to make sure. But it was, at least gave us, it clearly was the case, but it was, gave us pause because of the gap. But then all we had to do, interestingly enough, he had two sons. One passed away tragically, and of all things, an elevator accident shortly after, at the beginning of that, and
Jesus.
a beginning
Do
of
we
that
want to
type of thing.
No, I'm going to stop you there with
It's the
elevator
worst way to go.
accident. Was he in the elevator or working in the shaft? What happened? How did he
No,
die? That's
I don't know all the details. I had presumed that he was in it. The way I kind of read it was that he wasn't working in it. I mean, he certainly wasn't. I think at that point they didn't want to take over the business because they were plenty wealthy and having a great time. So I believe he was just on it. And yeah, that was the craziest story. And then his other son didn't take over, and they were kind of trust fund kids at that time. And so nobody in the family took it over. Now there's still, Ned had become friends with a number of his ancestors and great, great grandchildren and things like that. And Ned sent, when we recreated Munyon's and got it back to market, Ned had let them all in on it and told them and kind of kept them in the loop and introduced us to them via email. They've all purchased Munyon's online and they've had some really wonderful things to say about it. So it was a really nice kind of, you know, we really greatly appreciated that they had purchased the product, said sweet things about it and all those things. But yeah, it was an interesting step. But I went on that tangent kind of because of the gap in age between his wife and his last wife and Munyon.
Well, the thing I was going to point out is that John Harvey Kellogg, for some reason, never consummated his marriage, yet he had 40 adopted kids. He was totally wacky. And, you know, so he had this famous sanitarium up in Michigan in Battle Creek, and he wanted to have one in Florida. And so I've traced all these newspaper articles of him going around to different cities because everybody wanted to have it in their city. And he ended up in Miami Springs because Glenn Curtis had built this hotel, and then the Great Depression hit and he didn't want to deal with it. And so the story is he sold it to John Harvey Kellogg for a buck.
Oh, no kidding.
So it's still there. You can still go it. It's like a senior living kind of place. And
oh,
it's
wow.
Very unique architecture. So it's another, those two guys were very similar. You know, Florida has a history of people like Munyon coming here, you know, and people coming to Florida for health reasons, which is right up my alley. I was going to ask you, though, about the bottle. Is the bottle the original design? It's kind of unique with this kind of indentation that says Pawpaw on the side and Munyon's
on
the other.
Rick, so what I'm holding up here is this is the original bottle. Now there's a couple versions, but this bottle circa between 1903 and 1910, I believe. You know, we started buying all these old bottles online, and some variations without that embossing had shown up. But we took this one with the Munyon's Pawpaw, and this is the other you know, there's reference to the papaya tree in some of the literature. So that's another confirmation that it was papaya and not the pawpaw from up north. So we took that and used this. And actually, it's amazing what they do. A glass manufacturer, we sent this bottle and said, could you do this? And they're like, yeah, no problem. We'll scan it and we'll have, just tell us how big you want it to be. So we sized it up for a typical size for the liquor industry is a 750. So you're spot on. It's a replica of the original. And some of the bottles that showed up with the liquid, or sorry, with the label, we kind of gave it a facelift, but sort of stayed true to the design. But the actual bottle, the color and the shape and the embossing for Munyon's is the same.
Oh, I see. There's a little bit. You can see the hotel kind of ghosted back on the front. I never
correct.
Noticed that
yeah,
before.
We did a little bit of that, and Munyon was so. I guess I could tell you kind of what it is today since we're on the bottle. So we brought it back as an aperitif, which is a bittersweet liqueur. So it's a European tradition. If for anybody not familiar with it, so liqueur is kind of the big umbrella of the category in the spirits industry. You have your straight spirits like a vodka, rum, bourbon, anything that has more than 2.5% of anything else added to it becomes a liqueur. So it's a broad category, but it's from anything from your Bailey's Irish Cream to your Jägermeister to your, you know, Fireball these days, but then all the way down to your Camparis and your Aperols and everything. So the real big umbrella is liqueurs. And within that, you have what's called the bitters or the Amari, which is the Italian word for it. And that's your aperitifs and digestifs. So that's when you get into your Jägermeister, your Amaro Nonino and Fernet. But the big ones are Aperol and Campari that are sort of taken off. The Aperol Spritz is incredibly popular. The Negroni is incredibly popular. So that's the category. Now, these bittersweet liqueurs had a medicinal history. When you go way back, it was things like, you know, a chartreuse or a Fernet. These herbaceous root-based tinctures and tonics were designed to settle the stomach. And so they have this original medicinal start. And I didn't realize it, but when we were dealing with our master blender and distiller where we make the product in Miami, his name's Fernando Plata. He's fantastic at what he does. He told us, yeah, the reason why those bittering agents help you digest is because of millions of years of evolution, when your body tastes, you know, when your palate tastes bitter, the initial reaction, even though it may not be, is that this could be poisonous, right? So bitter has that indication that there's a possibility of poisonous. So your body almost starts the digestion process and salivating and the stomach acids a tick faster than it normally would if you were eating something sweet. So that's how it actually helps the digestion process. And so originally it was designed as a medicinal history. Eventually they became more a part of cocktail culture and balancing out a cocktail because they're bitter and sweet. They would have this element that a lot of cocktails need. A perfect cocktail has a balance of, it's got your alcohol base and then a balance of bitter and sweet. So you'll have, you know, your lime juice with your agave nectar. You'll have, you know, so you balance it out. So these cocktails being bittersweet would really complement that and played into a great cocktail culture. So we saw that. And for multiple reasons, we decided let's go with an aperitif. One, just commercially speaking, being in the industry, it's a growing category in the United States. People are getting more familiar with it. So we figured that it was more viable commercially. Secondly, it had that medicinal history to it. And so we thought that with the story of Munyon, that would be a good way to do it as well. And lastly, it kind of gives you a way to be somewhat unique. You know, if like, for example, Rick, you were talking about making a rum runner. If somebody's a rum drinker, we could come up with a cocktail for that. If somebody's a tequila drinker, here's a Paloma, a margarita. So it kind of gives us a little bit of leeway on that front as well. So that's how we wound up on aperitif. What makes us different from all the other aperitifs, obviously it's made locally and 9 times out of 10, and certainly all the category leaders are over in Europe. So ours is a genuine Florida product. I mentioned we make it down at, it's called Big Cypress Distillery, really cool craft distillery in Southwest Miami. And so we make it there with Fernando. And then a lot of the other ones have artificial colors and dyes, FD&C red and yellow dye, which are sort of kind of like hot topics these days. Ours is all natural. We kept it all natural. And then we do something kind of cool, which not everybody knows. If you peel open the back label, all 14 ingredients in our bottle. So in the top right corner, all 14, you peel that back and we just mentioned all of them. And 5 of these ingredients were actually grown on Munyon Island when he had the hotel. And we know that through old postcards and whatnot. So that's how we kind of tied it all back together.
Like an Easter egg. That's so cool. Yeah. I didn't notice that before. I'm just loving this. So, you know, I was telling Kathy, I went to Hungary in the 90s, and it, you know, the digestives are really big there. And the big one is Unicum Zwack. Have you seen that? It's a little green bottle with the red cross on it.
Yep, I know.
And
it.
They love it. If they start to feel sick, you know, they get a cold or something, anything, they'll start drinking it. And it's, you know, it's a taste you have to get used to. There is another one that I liked a little bit better that had juniper berries in it. It was very, very popular there. You know, we may have brought a couple bottles back and don't have them anymore, but that's exactly what this reminds me of. So it's a very pleasant memory for me.
I think the whole, I appreciate the explanation of the digestives because I didn't realize until maybe in my 30s that you could drink something when you had an upset stomach. Like, I mean, that's not true. My dad would always give me lemon water, like half lemon, half water. But I was out and I was at a German restaurant. And I just way overdid it. And one of my friends says, well, here, they have some bitters here. And like, what? And it worked. It was incredible. It's like magic. It's like a little bit of magic. But I have a feeling if I threw back just a straight shot of the liqueur, it might not have the same effect. Rick, do you have your wife's rum runner recipe so we can...
No, but I can find it from her. She may have found it online, but we also have some kind of cool vintage cocktail books too that we use sometimes. So I'm not sure which one she used. I'm guessing she probably found it online, but I'll find out when she's back and we can.
Yeah. So what we'll do is we're going to put a whole bunch of information in the show notes, including a link to Munyon's pawpaw, a link to the island. So people can go visit it. And then what I'll do is I'll put a post on greatfloridaroadtrip.com with the recipe. And so if people want to get a bottle of Munyon's and try this out themselves, they can. I mean, Rick's wife is not available to travel around the state and and make rum runners. But probably something people would want to recreate. The Rum Runner, by the way, is a drink that was invented in Florida. So it's a double down on a Florida drink.
I like that. I like that a lot. So I have a question, though. The John D. MacArthur State Park, that's not John named after John D. MacArthur, the writer, is it?
I think you're thinking of John D. MacDonald.
John D. MacDonald. I did that the other day.
So no.
That's a mix up.
MacArthur was in the finance business, I believe, in Chicago area, if I'm not mistaken. I know.
Yeah, I'm getting the two mixed up. Yeah. Boy, that's going to be my – I'm going to have to do that every show now just so people can laugh at me because I get those two mixed up. I did that
the
other day.
Confused.
Yeah, it's a lot of names.
I've done it. We've done it. We can always have Chad edit it out, but I think it makes the celebrity that is Rick Kilby more accessible to the masses.
I have a hard time with names these days, but I do know there were other hotel Hygieias. It was a popular thing, and
that is the least appealing name of a hotel.
It was a different time. I think you have to look at it through the lens of, you know, the Victorian travelers that, you know, they were all about coming to Florida for their health. You know, that would have been so cool. Are there any pictures of the interior of the hotel? I've only seen that one exterior shot.
Yeah. You know, there's a couple that I believe I'm going to look into that, Rick, because there's some that may be that hotel, but the catch is that he was sort of, you know, he was in the Royal Poinciana a lot. He was in the Breakers a lot. So I would just need to confirm it, but it's fascinating. You mentioned the old pictures. There's one old picture and this was great. So he's on Clematis Street, which Clematis is our main street in West Palm Beach. Right. And it's way back when 1907, 1908. And he's Munyon again, fascinating character, great marketer. We could talk about that forever, but he had the Hope Association, which was like his fan club. So you could pay a dollar back in the day per year. You would get a guide to health, which was a little almanac. You would have the right to write in and he would have his doctors prescribe for you an actual remedy, which was always a Munyon's homeopathic remedy. But you would get a little lapel pin called the guide or that was a There Is Hope pin. And his famous saying was there's hope. So now we actually recreated the pins. We send them out to people if you sign up on our website, whatever, but it's kind of cool. But this little lapel pin was awesome, but his signature was there is hope. And Rick, on the back of the bottle where you looked, it kind of has that finger pointed in the air to where you can, that Easter egg hunt. So he has a picture with him and this young boy, and they both have their hand in the air in the there's hope salutation, which apparently was quite ubiquitous salutation when he was here. And we had somebody reach out to us on our website and say, I know that guy, that little boy is my great, great uncle or something like that. Turned out it was Banzai Curry. Banzai is his nickname. He wound up becoming a pretty prominent judge in Palm Beach County. But you have these great pictures from back in the day as we're doing our research that lead to these amazing stories and anecdotes and kind of connecting with the consumers and the people that are following the brand.
That's such a great story. So will they have this at bars or is it, how do you get it? Is it liquor stores or?
Yeah.
Just
so we're with the biggest distributor in the state, Southern Glazers. So any bar, restaurant or liquor store could get it on their next order. However, right now, ABC Fine Wine and Spirits has it in almost all their stores. Total Wine has it in almost all their stores. Some kind of little pockets around the state. But we've had a lot of where you could just find like a mom and pop liquor store. And then we've had quite a bit of success just when we run around. It's me and Paul basically running around Florida. So big state to cover, as you guys know. But we've had nice little pockets where there's some really good spots, some iconic spots too. Some that people may know, being Floridians, the Mai Kai in Fort Lauderdale just opened back up and they have us there. Joe Stone Crab down in Miami. Universal Studios is going to have us at their new Epic facility. So we are their new theme park. And then there's some really cool, just kind of Florida-esque. This was really, really great. We was driving from Tallahassee last week back down to Palm Beach County. And in High Springs, you're familiar with High Springs?
Yes, I am.
Yes, we are.
There's this excellent restaurant that I got the opportunity to go to, the Great Outdoors Restaurant. and they had a bottle of Munyon's there. So we were telling the story, and it was the perfect fit. So we find these nice little pockets where people enjoy a Florida story, love it, and we get, we get some love there too. So anywhere can have it, as far as they can purchase it if they have a liquor license. So it helps if you see it, you don't see it, ask for it, you see it, even better.
Well, I have a place here I'm going to talk to and say, you really need to carry this.
Oh, well, thank you
Yeah,
so much.
I got to think of the right place in Orlando. There's a lot of little crafty cocktail places.
Oh, I can see this in about 20 places in Orlando where it just fits right in. And there's a place that we go to here called Floridorama, and unfortunately, they don't have a liquor license, but it's owned by the same people who are powering the Florida Wildlife Corridor. And I could see them if they had a liquor license. It would be great. You should find a way to partner with them somehow. Anyway,
Yeah,
anyway,
I'd love
anyway.
to. I think Rick, the Otto's High Dive has it as well. And then there's a really cool spot. Interestingly enough, as you guys know, the tiki culture has really kind of embraced Munyon's and speaking of the Maikai. And then there's in the Copper Rocket is the name of the in Maitland is the name of the restaurant, but there's a speakeasy. Permanent vacation. It's a speakeasy tiki bar. It looks like you're familiar with it,
I
Rick.
haven't been since they opened a tiki bar. It used to be a hangout because they used to have bands that I loved to play, played the Copper Rocket all the time. Otto's High Dive is like 2 miles from my house. So
Yeah.
I'm
It looks
excited.
great.
I'm so excited. And I'm hoping to be at the tiki show with Kathy next month
Yeah, are you
in
going to be
Orlando.
at Tiki A Go Go in Orlando in April?
On the Friday, I'll be there. So
Well, you have
yeah,
to come find me. I will be there. Rick should be there too, I hope.
I love it. I can't wait to meet you guys face to face. I mean, Zoom is great, but it's the old school way.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Rick, I have the prototype of my alligator tiki mug, but I'm not sure I can get them fired in time.
well, if you only get one or two, it's a collector's item. I'll just sell them for you for $500.
That's true. That's true. When it's so, yeah, I'll have to work on it.
Speaking of. And this is a perfect segue. Joe, you're welcome to hang out. We've got a few more minutes. Thank you for being here. But speaking of Tiki A Go Go, I am going to have a fun little book ready to sell at Tiki A Go Go called It Came From Florida: B Movies of the Sunshine State. And our premium podcast listeners, the ones who are at the $10 a month support level, are going to get a free copy of that book in the mail. So now is a
Wow.
great time to join as a premium podcast listener. And we have all kinds of goodies. We're getting ready to send out this month's goodies. Unfortunately, we don't have mini bottles of Munyon's Pawpaw we can send out. I tried. But we do want to thank all our listeners. We have a new listener, Brian Woodall. He joined at the highest level just a few days ago. The Betts Boys Adventures, the cute little dad with his cute little kids who videotapes them going to museums. Elise Smith, Carol Miller, Lisa, Leslie Hallweg, Davida Breyer, author of Sinkhole, Natalie Zakrich, Angela Connolly, John Bone, Ryan Worthington, host of the Florida Madcaps, or co-host of Florida Madcaps, and co-host of As Bad as It Gets. And our OG very first subscriber, Michael Gargalak. So thank you all for supporting this podcast. It enables us to do things like find delicious pawpaw liqueur and enjoy it in a rum runner without the rum over guacamole and chips, and also bring you more Florida goodness. So, with that said, this has been an adventure-filled 40 minutes. Thank you for listening, tuning in every week. And Rick and I will see you soon. And please go ask for Munyon's pawpaw liqueur at wherever you get your aperitifs. Have a great week.
Enjoy the Hope Association. There is hope.